millions of women in business that are crushing it. And I mean, seriously, crushing it. Some who you know and many who you've never even heard of. They're going to share how they did it so you can figure out how you can do it too. But here's the deal. It's not just about sales and selling. So I'm going to be bringing you the woo too. Get ready, get set, because it's almost go time for Women Crush Wednesday. I'm your host of Woman Crush Wednesday, and today I've invited a very, very special guest to co-host this episode with me, and his name is
Ralph Cramden. I'm a bus driver in Brooklyn. Oh, wait, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling, and I am married to the great Jen Gluckow.
Aw, Jeffrey, yeah. I'm so happy you're joining the Wednesday episode today.
It just
warms my heart.
Yeah, I know.
What's going on with you?
I am fresh back from Cleveland, Ohio, where I took a plane this morning at 6:30, and I'm fucking tired. But
that means you left at like 4:30.
Yeah, in the morning.
No, the best was last night. It was like midnight, and you're like, Jen, I don't want to sound. We were on the phone, and you're like, Jen, I don't want to sound like an old man or anything, but I'm tired. Okay, you had woken up at 4 a.m. And you gave a seminar, yep. And it was midnight, and yep. I was like, okay, go to sleep. I love you, honey. And you're like, you know, you can call me at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll be up. And I'm like, I won't.
Got it. So, I like your opening for Women Crush Wednesday. It's very, bebop.
Yeah.
And
gets you going.
Up tempo, I agree. And your little intro is phenomenal. Very, very well done. And I think that women will be attracted to this. Even some men will try to sneak in and sneak a listen. Who we got today?
Today we have an amazing guest. Her name is Haley Bohan. She's the founder of Skillpop. She actually joined me live in our Gittimer studios in Charlotte to do this episode. And she created this thing called Skillpop. Skillpop is a community-driven way for people to access in-person classes. And they talk about like all different subjects. They have classes on farming and chicken raising. They have classes on like how you can grow vegetables in your backyard, to art classes and sales classes and classes on LinkedIn. It's really freaking cool. And actually, I'm signed up to take a class coming soon, and I'll let you know what that is shortly after I take it, you guys. But I'm really excited because Haley is an entrepreneur, and I'm going to tell you how she built, funded, and expanded Skillpop at scale so that you can learn how to do it too.
You know, and I apologize for interrupting, but I think that you neglected to say that her classes are short.
Yes.
And they're attractive to someone who only has an hour and a half to learn something, or maybe 2 hours to learn something. And they're after work, so there's a lot of socializing going on.
Yeah. So like couples sign up, individual singles sign up. I mean, it's a really cool way to get to know somebody else in a no pressure environment. And she actually talks about the different types of people that go and their reasons for going. It's pretty cool. But listen to this for the business aspect of it. And listen to this for, even if you're not an entrepreneur, you're still the CEO of your territory. So how can you use some of her lessons to build your own territory? All right, what were you doing before Skillpop?
So I've been in Charlotte about 6.5 years. I did study engineering at NC State University and came here to do product development for Newell Rubbermaid. So I was a mechanical engineer for them for a couple of years.
Okay.
But by the time I was thinking about Skillpop, I had transitioned into implementation and project management for a tech startup in town. So I was already, I'd gone from big corporate to, you know, high growth, intense startup, and I'd started to see a little more of the behind the scenes of what does it look like to, you know, what are the real people who are running companies and starting companies every day. And I started to have this need of on my own of I was looking for things to do and ways to meet people. And that's a lot of where Skillpop came from. So I left a tech company to start
Skillpop. Oh, very cool. Okay. And so what was that like leaving? Because you have this job and now you're like, well, I'm going to start this other thing.
It was, what was it like leaving? It was methodical is the word that comes to mind. So I had been there maybe a year and a half, like not a super, super long time. I started thinking about the idea for Skillpop in June of 2015. I mean, okay. I can remember like the family beach trip that I was on where I was saying, hey guys, what do you think about this idea? I was texting my best friend all the time from college thinking if you wanted to take a class, where would you find it? And so I spent, you know, from June to August doing a lot of nights and weekends research. Okay. You know, I was looking for places to take classes in Charlotte on anything. I took a coding class. I don't code. I wasn't looking to code, but you know, things like that. I was just looking for, if you were going to learn, where do you do that already? I took online classes. I watched YouTube videos. And then I also was just fleshing out the concept, you know, who would teach, where would we host them? How much could we charge? All of those things. So by the time it got to leaving my full-time job, we had just done our very first class and it worked really
well.
What
was the first class?
The first class was a hand lettering basics class. So this is, I started thinking about it in June. This is fast forward to August. I had the name Skillpop. I had a really, really basic drag and drop website. So just enough to have put it out in the world. And I, you know, had invested maybe $500 to $1,000 of my own money into, you know, the company so far. And so all that to say, hand lettering was something that I thought I can afford to buy pens and paper and put this class on without
Did you teach it?
No. So I found a friend of a friend. Teach it. Her name's Kaylee Olson. She is absolutely incredible. I sent her an email out of nowhere and said, hey, I have this idea. Do you want to get coffee and talk about it? And she said, yes. And, so we met at Amelie's and talked all about it, had the first class. And after that, I thought, you know, there's really something here and it's something I need to give a lot of attention to. You know, it's not something that I can do on the side.
Now, did you make a lot of money from that first class? How did you get people to even show up? How did you advertise it?
Yeah, we did it. I did it totally for free. So I didn't make any, I made $0 in the first class. but I really wanted to just put it into the world and see if it was a good idea. See if it, you know, I had it in my head working well. And I was like, I need to see this in real life. And I kind of wanted to see if it worked before I started charging people for it.
Okay, so there were no stakes.
So there were no stakes.
Just come,
it was,
you're going to learn.
I have 15 spots, first come, first serve. They filled up really quickly, and all except for maybe one or two, every single person there was a stranger, you know, was someone who saw it on Instagram or on Twitter or heard about it from a friend. And it was such a cool snapshot looking back of what we've become today, you know, because there was a couple that was there on their date night and there were neighbors that came as their like girls' night out. And there are people who came by themselves just because they were like, oh, I want to learn how to do that. And that's what we see in classes all the time now.
Wow. Okay. So how many classes are you teaching now on like a monthly basis?
So we are doing about 130 classes a month between all of our communities. So Skillpop right now is in here in Charlotte.
Yeah.
We're in Raleigh, North Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee. And then we have just started doing a few classes in Lake Norman, Davidson area as well.
Way to go.
So between all of those, it's about 130 classes.
Way to go. And so what's like the thing you were hoping, what was the thing you were hoping for when you set out and taught that and had that first class done? Was it like to build community? Was it like, what were you looking for that would tell you if this happens, it's a success?
Oh, that is such a great question. And I think it was a couple of things. You know, looking back, the thing that I was looking for that I felt like was a white space or a hole was both the what's the easy place you can go to learn something, but to learn it from someone in real life.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like online education is incredible and there are so many resources out there. But if you're someone like me that can't get through a video tutorial without checking my phone three times or like getting distracted and going and putting laundry in, I wanted something that was more focused, right? And also where you can have a teacher in the room and say, hey, can you show me how to do that one more time? So that was a big piece of it that I was hoping to create. But I really think a lot of community does happen around learning. And so at this stage of my life, I was going to a lot of networking events and speaker series, and I was seeing what was already out there just in that space and thought, man, how great would it be to have events focused around something like learning, where if you meet someone, great, you already have a common interest of gardening or photography. If you don't, fine. You know, you're walking
at least
away
you
with
learn something.
Skill.
Exactly. That's so cool. I love that. Okay, so you taught this first class, you go back to your job and then you're like, I'm out. Peace.
So I had, a couple of things. So I think one thing that I want to like, I don't know, give my husband and I a pat on the back for us.
Yeah.
We had a really specific list of like, here is what Skillpop needs to be at a bare minimum before we can take the leap. So I feel like a lot of times you hear the glamour stories of like, I threw it all to the side and I jumped off the bridge and started this thing. But we did have a list of, you know, we need this many email subscribers and we need to be registered as a real business and have a business bank. It's the most bare minimum things, but like, this has to be a real thing to quit a great
job
for.
And does he do it too?
No, he did for a little bit, and that's a whole other story that we can go into, but in the beginning it was just me. So we had a list, and it was like, when all those boxes are checked, it's go time.
Okay.
And as far as leaving my employer, you know, I had talked about Skillpop at work and this kind of side project that I was working on, and I called it like a project because I didn't know what it would become. You know, I didn't know I was starting a company. And so I don't think it was any huge surprise when I put in my notice. I did keep doing some contract work, not for them, but for someone else for about 6 months, just to keep my, you know, stay a little bit in the career path I was on already in case everything crashed and burned.
Was it scary leaving a stable job to?
It wasn't. It really wasn't. And I will credit a big part of that to the company that I left. You know, my last day of work, the CEO, we sat down and he gave me business advice. And so it was just the absolute best,
that's amazing.
Good luck, we're cheering for you kind of tone to end on. I think also having been working in a startup, it seemed, it seemed like I felt like I could do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's something empowering about going from a smaller company to starting my own thing. And then the last thing is my husband had a great job too. And so there is something about having a partner and having a little bit of security there. You know, we definitely were taking a big risk, but it was a different level of risk than if I was 100% all on my own.
What would you say to someone who's thinking about, you know, starting a business, but out as a project to like figure it out? What should they, when would they know it's right to like take that leap?
Yeah. So there is a product development term, or maybe it's an entrepreneurship term, I'm not sure, but the MVP, it's the minimum viable product.
Yep.
And I am just such a huge fan of that concept.
Okay.
And so I'm a really big believer of whatever your idea or your, whatever your idea is, figure out the minimum you can get it together, whether it's a, you know, a physical thing or whether it's like, you know, mine was an event. Figure out the minimum thing and then just put it into the world. And whether you're getting a wait list or pre-orders or people are buying it, you know, I think for me, it gave me a lot of confidence to start Skillpop that I had done that MVP of a first class and seen it fill up in 24 hours and heard people.
24 hours?
Yeah. Wow. And so I had heard people saying, when will the next one be? And, oh, you should definitely be charging for this. And so I had enough of that feedback on that early thing that I knew, okay, this isn't just a good idea for me. Like other people think this is a good idea too, and they want it and they're interested in it.
Wow. And so, okay, initially you had a small following because you were working on creating that, but how did you get the word out there?
So we have done a couple of things. From early on, I worked really hard to build a social media presence and then to have a consistent email campaign.
Okay.
And so from day one, it was like just me in the beginning, but from day one, I really pushed people, you know, sign up for the newsletter. That is where you will hear about classes first. That's still true today. And so it's really paid off as things like Instagram algorithms have changed and as the way you reach people has shifted and changed a little bit, but we've always funneled people to hear about classes through the newsletter. So that's one big piece. But, you know, through social media, I think our company is very community-based, and so I've looked at our marketing in that way, too. You know, every time someone comes on and teaches with us, they are buying into our community, and they're talking about our community. So it's not just been me with a megaphone saying, Skillpop, Skillpop, Skillpop. It's been a lot of people, you know, talking to their network about whatever class they're teaching. And then the people who are going to the classes are talking about it, too. So we have gotten really a good, good word-of-mouth build from the beginning. And we try and do things intentionally to use that, to help it go further, to encourage that, all of those things. Yeah.
That's awesome. What's the craziest class you've ever hosted in Skill Pop?
Oh, that's a great question. Craziest class. There are definitely classes that I did not, wouldn't have ever guessed we would have done. You know, I could have predicted the photography and mm-hmm. marketing basics and things like that. The one that is my example over and over again is we do a class on how to raise backyard chickens about once a year.
What? It is. Adam it is has on, chickens.
It's on a farm in downtown Matthews. And I don't know if you know this, but baby chicks have a season. So it happens in April.
I did not know that.
If you want to raise chickens, you start in April. And so every April we work with Renfro Farms to do a class, and people come and they start the class out by passing around a live chicken. And they say, if you cannot handle holding a live chicken, then you need to think twice about your decisions going forward.
Oh,
it is so fun. And it is just, you know, again, to me, it's like you can't replicate that experience in a YouTube. You can learn how to raise chickens elsewhere, but there's nothing like, you know, being in a 100-year-old hardware store in downtown Matthews, passing around a live chicken and hearing about what to do with it.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
And what a bonding experience for people who don't even know each other, because you're laughing and it's quirky and it's awkward, I'm sure.
Totally. Yeah.
Wow. So what's been the biggest surprise throughout this entrepreneurial journey?
Oh, that's a great question too. you know, I think the thing that I go back to is how much it changes, you know? And so, I heard a really great analogy maybe a year ago about how building a business is like playing a video game. Mm. And I'm not a big video game player, but you know, like played enough Mario Kart to get the concept, to where the problems and challenges don't go away. They just level up. And so
yes.
I think what has been, you know, when I first started, you think, oh, I am going to figure out how to run a great class, how to do marketing and build a brand and get people interested in it. And there it is. But I didn't think about how then a year later, things you're figuring out are, how do I lead a team? How do I hire? How do I scale into new cities and do marketing in a totally different way?
Mm-hmm.
And so the way the, just the whole experience of starting and running a company, it reinvents itself like every 6 months. You're doing it from all over again. You're starting from scratch every 6 months.
It's like you're unlocking new levels in that video game
exactly.
and then have to figure out the new secret codes.
Yeah, it's like you figure everything out and then you're like, wait, I'm on level 4 now.
Yeah. Have to jump a little higher and press these two buttons.
Exactly. And you're like, where did that come from? Where are we going now? Yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. And so what has it been like to scale in other cities?
Yeah. So that's a fun story too. You know, I went to NC State, so I had to have a pretty good network in Raleigh. And so as soon as I started this here, one of the first things I heard was, ooh, like, when are you going to come to Raleigh? Will you bring this here? We want to take classes too. So those seeds were planted pretty early on. And so in 2015, I launched Skill Pop. 2016, we opened in Raleigh. And then we opened in Nashville and Greenville in 2017.
And do you have someone who manages each city?
I have a part-time staff spread throughout all of those, but we do a lot of the planning and logistics we do from Charlotte. I would say scaling into new cities, it has just been experimenting over and over again. You know, the way we do it now as we look at our future markets even is the strategy and the playbook is different than it was first opening in Raleigh, because you know you don't know what you don't know,
mm-hmm.
and so each time we're just doing the best we can to spin it up, and a lot of it, you know, feels very similar to the classes we run in Charlotte, but it's a totally different ballgame as far as how to get the word out, and you know, figuring out a city when you don't live there can be really challenging.
Yes.
So it is. I feel like every single one we learn something, and none of them have been perfect yet.
Well, that would be rare.
Yeah.
And has getting the word out changed? You alluded to the fact that like the Instagram algorithm mm-hmm. is changing and there's lots going on right now on social media where it's harder and harder to see posts. So mm-hmm. does that make your business harder?
You know, it hasn't yet. I think it just changes it, but there's ways that we've changed too.
Yeah.
Really early on, I would do a post about every class and it would be sign up for photography because it was the one class that week.
Yeah.
Right. So that was a lot of our content. And so as we've grown up as a business, our content has already changed to being more of the storytelling of what's happening in classes and, inspiration for projects you could start, things like that. I don't know. It feels harder, but we're also kind of in the middle of it with with things that are changing. So it's a little bit hard to say.
Yeah. That's cool. It's hard to know how exactly they're going to change it with the new no likes thing and you know, all the things going on and what's to come. But having that backup, or really more of like the foundation of having that email list, is so critical right now, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's we're always just looking for what's the new thing within these platforms, and then how else should we be plugging into communities and getting the word out to not be totally dependent on one thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of our diehards are salespeople that are always looking to go deeper with their customer. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about, like, how many people come and take a class and then they have this experience and now they're like, oh, I need to take more classes. Yeah. And so how does that work, and how can they replicate that in their world?
Yeah. So we do see a lot of repeat students and we try and be strategic about what we're offering to encourage that. So I had a really interesting conversation with one of our students maybe a year and a half ago. We were just doing some surveys. We pulled our maybe 50 top customers and called every single one of them to hear, what do you like about Skillpop? What should we change? What keeps you coming back to classes? Those kinds of things. And I had a woman say, you know, I love what you do, but I've come to every class that you've taken. I wish you would offer more. And I'm thinking, we offer like 75 classes have you taken? And so I looked her up, and she had come to every watercolor class that we'd taken or that we had taught, but she was laser focused on that. And so the takeaway there for me was trying to build in the diversity, not even just among our topics, but within our topics, that keeps people coming back again and again and again. And so when I think, you know, I try and think about our customers and think through not just what are the classes that we want to offer to the broad audience, but on an individual level, you know, is there going to be enough content that there is a reason for people to come back and there is a way for them to build on the skill that they learn the first time? I don't know if there's a takeaway there for who you're talking about.
No, but, for sure. Yeah. Because it's really looking at, first of all, I love that you did a survey and you, to call 50 customers is not an easy thing. Yeah. That's awesome.
But we learned so much.
What are some of the other key takeaways that you learned?
You know, I think anytime I can talk to people who are in classes, it helps open my eyes to what the experience is really like. Mm-hmm. One thing that was really interesting for me was hearing about people who come by themselves. And so you think about events in general, and a lot of spending is shifting towards experiences. You see like Airbnb doing an experience play. You see Eventbrite really growing. And so when you think experiences and we think millennials, a lot of times what you're picturing is groups going out together, or like couples doing date night, or, you know, big kind of really, really social gatherings. But we have a lot of students come by themselves for classes. And in one of these calls we had, someone explained her viewpoint on it to me. And she said, the format that we have, it is just a low bar social activity. And so she feels like she can come by herself. And if she has had a great day and is high energy and wants to make friends at her table, there are friends at her table to make. Yeah. Right there. You can meet people. You can be social. You can talk. If she has had a really long day and she's tired and she just wants to kind of be an introvert and paint, but not be by herself at home, this is a space for her to be an introvert and paint and not be by herself at home. So just hearing kind of like it, you know, that didn't change necessarily anything about how we were running the business. But I think it's so interesting and helpful when, you know, now when we're writing our content or when we're thinking about what classes to offer, it's so interesting and helpful to kind of hear how are the wheels turning for the people who are clicking add to cart on our website. What is making them do that? What are they looking for out of the experience?
But the key is that you're really getting into the mind of your customer and understanding, okay, there's four or five different people, types of people who come. There's the single person who comes, there's the couple that comes, there's a group of friends who come, whatever it may be, right? And understanding their why, like what's making them want to sign up for a class, what's that reasoning? And it's so cool that you're getting into their brain to figure that out, you know?
I think it's such a key to keeping a business alive is to knowing, why are people coming for whatever you have?
And did you talk to all 50 of those people, just curious, or did you get a lot of, I'll call you later, or voicemail or whatever?
We talked to a lot. So at the time my team was, I think I had 7 full-time employees. So it was a divide and conquer kind of project.
Yeah.
And I would say we at least got to 40. But we, you know, we'd email first and say, I'd love to ask you a few questions and set up a time, that kind of thing.
I just think that a lot of people are hesitant to call their customers because they're afraid to ask those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, they don't want to bother them. They don't want to interrupt them. They don't realize that by asking those questions, they're actually making their experience so much better for the long run working with you. And so what should that person be thinking about? Like, how can they approach their customers and really ask good questions of them to find out what's going on in their mind?
Well, I think if calling is intimidating, you don't have to do that is the first thing. And we try and ask for feedback all the time. So after every single class, we send out a survey automatically that says, what did you think about it? You know, rate the class. What did you like the most about it? What should be improved for next time? And so we've always done that from day one. So I think it's just ingrained in our culture that we want to hear what people have to say. And we want, you know, I want the company to be, I want it to be something people like, and you don't know what's going well unless you ask. So that's one thing. I think what a lot of people are afraid of and what I can be afraid of is if something's bad, I don't want to know. I think
that's exactly what you do want to know.
But that's
right?
What you want to know. So I think there's just kind of a leap of faith in having to know. It's just better to know than to not know, because then you can take action and do something about it.
Cool. How do you keep the standard the same across so many classes, working with so many different instructors, because they're all different providers for you, right? And so how do you maintain that same level of standard so that someone who is going to a class knows it's Skill Pop? I know what I'm going to get because I trust them.
Yeah. So that is a really important part of our brand, is we want people to trust that we're choosing great classes for them to take. And so every single class that's on our website is someone that we have vetted and interviewed. Mm-hmm. We have an application to teach. And so there's no, you know, I'm listing my class on Skill Pop site. You know, we've talked to every single person who comes on to teach with us. So that's a first big hurdle that a lot of, I would say similar platforms in, you know, in education, outside of education, it's just a differentiator, I guess. And then another thing is that feedback survey, because there were early days, you know, really, really early Skill Pop where I was at every single class. And so if something felt not quite right, we would talk about it. And I'd say, you know, it seemed like maybe students weren't as engaged. Let's talk about some ways to make it more interactive, or it needs to be a little bit long, whatever the things were. And now that we've grown and I'm not physically at every class.
You can't go to every class.
No. I wish I could. I wish I could. But getting that survey from students, and then we do staff every class. So from our team members as well. To keep, just feel like we have know what's going on, has been really helpful.
Wow. I mean, that is definitely a differentiator, because I've been listed on other people's websites where they like that teach classes, mainly when I was back in New York. Yeah. And, you know, they were more of like a booking service for me than anything, and had no interaction with me. No, they didn't qualify me in any way. It's just like, do you want to teach? Yeah, sure. Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
We'll link out to your website and they can book them right there.
So that was probably fine.
For me, I'm awesome. They're going to help me get students.
Yeah.
How do you break through the noise though? Because like, even when I was teaching those classes, there were so many other in-person instructors. And I don't know if that's the case here or not, but you know, and as you're expanding to other cities, there's other noise.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you do that.
Well, here when we started, there was not a lot. There were a couple of really great companies that had a strong focus. So you think like Chef Alyssa's Kitchen does cooking classes, or Tech Talent South was doing coding. But as far as, you know, when I was looking for where do I go to learn how to use my camera, that doesn't take 8 weekday nights and, you know, the next weeks or a whole weekend. That's the thing that I couldn't find. So I know, you know, in somewhere like New York, there is a lot more. But here at the time, there was a lot of white space. It depends a little bit city to city. You know, as we've gone into Nashville, there's definitely a lot more noise there, a lot more that we're competing with. And I can't say that we have 100% flawless answer yet.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it has been word of mouth. A lot of it has been having the best of the best instructors and really, really in-demand topics. I would say those are our top two, is just trying to go into new places with a lot of focus and do what we're doing the best that we can do it, and then go from there.
So one of the things I think is so cool about this episode is that Haley realized she had a calling. Haley realized there was an opportunity to create something from nothing. And rather than just shove that idea under the table and say, I have a great job, I'm just going to, you know, keep going at it. She was like, oh, well, let me do a small test. Let me see if there's interest. Okay, there's interest. Now, let me see if I can actually, if there's a viable business model here. And I love her idea of like the MVP, the minimum viable product. What is the smallest thing that you have to create in order to really understand if there's something there or to be able to even release it? And so the question I want to talk about for diehards is, how do you know when you're being called to lead? And how do you create the courage and the path to go first? Because she realized there was an empty market here. There was like nothing going on in this industry, or almost nothing. And she took that chance. So many people might say, oh, well, shit, there's nothing going on, so that must mean there's no market. And I want to talk about with you, Jeffrey, like, you know, what do you do in that situation?
You go with your gut and you go with your heart. I mean, she's obviously a person who was willing to follow her dream and follow through on her dream.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between following and following through. She actually had a game plan. And with her equations of, you know, what's the minimum acceptable standards or the minimum acceptable results, she got the results, and that gave her the courage to take the next step and the next step.
Yeah.
Courses are not new. But the way she did it had an appeal to the people who were looking for education and looking for community or looking for socialization or looking for stimulation beyond work.
Yeah, and she did it in such a cool way where she really tested the market, she got feedback, she tweaked, she embraced the negatives. So like so many people, when there's a negative or there's some sort of issue in sales and selling, they're like, the sale's over, I lost it. You know, and it's like, no, embrace it, bring it on, give it to me, let me solve it. And that's the attitude you need every single time.
And you can call it woo if you want to, but I'm telling you, she's making money at it. And that's a bigger woo.
Well, I think the woo part of it is, you know, you really need to step up. This is your time right now. And whatever you're doing, don't be a follower, be a leader, and find the courage. You have it within you to create that path, create that yellow brick road to success, and really just get it.
There is a way, and I think that this particular Women Crush Wednesday would give inspiration to someone to follow their idea and to follow their dream. It doesn't have to be educational classes in Memphis, but it does have to be something that you believe in that you think can make happen.
That's right. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And while this is Woman Crush Wednesday, I want you to go crush it every day of the week.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.